This is really good.
I'm digging it.
Happy
Tuesday.
Welcome to the Clatch.
Boom.
We are here without our fearless leader, Linda Nygaard, who is vacationing in Holland, in Amsterdam, that wonderful city.
Damn it.
Yeah, really. And that was Heidi Skrypek, and I'm Susan McCabe, and we have a very special guest with us here today. She is Gail Kellner, teacher, author, political rampager. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here this morning. Or afternoon already. Boom, 3 o'clock. What am I talking about?
It's gray. You'd never know what time it is.
And pretty soon it's dark and then it's time to go to bed at 6.
Right. Yeah.
So we have started every Clatch with a COVID update. And we were thinking for a while that we were going to be able to skip the COVID update. But no. No. So Vashon, be prepared. Has a brand new alert thing.
And there's like 7 variants coursing their way through.
Are there really?
7. 7 B variants.
Hey, many Christmas. All right, is everybody boosted and boosted and boosted?
I'm not, what did they, how do they pronounce it? Bivalent? Bivalented. I'm not that one. Because I had the second booster in late July, and I think they say optimally you want to wait about 6 months.
Oh.
So I think I would be pushing it. I'd rather wait till I need the full juice and get the full effect. So wait another month or two.
Right. So you haven't had it, have you?
Not that I know of.
No, you're right.
I got taken down in Europe with some virus that didn't register on my rapid test, so I don't know. Did you have it, Gail?
I've been really fortunate. I have not gotten it. I guess I have to say all of my adult children in my life have had it.
Oh,
some
wow.
of them more than once. But for them, it has not been a serious issue. So it's
good.
They've come through it with flying colors. So they don't have the same worries. That's been my observation. Anyway, the younger you are, the less you're worried about it. But
I agree. My adult children, who are considerably older than yours, have had it fairly recently in Los Angeles. And they were, a couple of them were down for the count.
Right.
Man.
Yeah.
Right.
But
right.
just about everybody I know on Vashon has had it.
My son Zach had it. Alex has not yet had it. But then he was in zero tolerance land. Zero. COVID
oh,
zero
that's
land.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
Lockdown.
So, according to Vashon, be prepared. There are 3 risk levels here on the island.
Okay.
The basic risk, which is blue. The elevated risk, which is yellow, and the high risk, which is red. We are currently at the basic risk level.
Okay.
So.
Not too bad.
Yeah, right.
Still in the blue zone.
In the blue zone, yeah. Oh, that means we get to live to be 100, right?
When you walk through Thriftway, what is it feeling like these days? I think it's feeling elevated. When you look around, people are masking a little more.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Things have taken a little swing.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. I was on a plane for the first time in a long time last week, and I think my sister and I, who were traveling together, were almost the only ones on the plane who were wearing masks.
Oh, really?
And
on planes?
That really surprised
me. Yeah. Were you on Southwest?
No.
Oh, you get my jokes. I like you. You can stay.
Or JetBlue.
Or Spirit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm sorry. I had to ask, though. Okay.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So far the 3 of us are healthy.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. I'm figuring that they should be studying the people who've been exposed and are not getting it. People like us should be in a controlled spa-like environment, so that we can be studied for anti-COVID whatever we have
in the spa.
Of course.
We're all studying
regular massages and steam and all that. Oh, yoga.
But there was, I hate saying there was a study, but I know I read there is some study out there for those who have not yet had it, but have darn well know they've been exposed to it. And it has to do with your genes. It's genetics.
Oh,
yeah.
I figured that.
Yeah.
But then my kids got it.
Yeah. That's your ex.
Just kidding.
Yeah, it's his fault. That's right.
Can always blame them.
That's right. Blame
right?
the ex.
We're going to try anyway.
All right. So that covers our COVID update.
Flu virus is starting to run around. And people with little kids, RSV and bronchiolitis and pneumonia because of RSV is raging.
RSV?
Yeah, it's a little nasty virus, and it's particularly dangerous for infants like 6 months or younger. And Zachary, my youngest, caught it when he was, I want to say 6 or so months old, when I had just moved from Hawaii to Bremerton. And he came down with RSV, something that Alexander probably brought home from preschool. It is raging. It is a serious thing to watch.
Is it a pulmonary?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yes. And what happens is this little bug gets into your lungs and it constricts your airways, and hospitalizations are quite common. Afterward, you get to spend quality time with a nebulizer and albuterol, just basically gassing your baby every time they get through that, number one. But then every time they catch a cold, it just goes sideways into this really bad.
So there's a long-term effect.
Yeah, exactly. It's like COVID, but it's like long RSV instead of long COVID. It's really bad. Yeah. So be careful.
Anything out there, you know, as mothers, I think we all kind of cringe at anything that that might hurt our children or our grandchildren.
Yeah.
It feels especially sad and
totally.
Yeah, and I really think the Earth is just finding ways to slough us off.
I mean, we are
huge. Yeah, we're a real infestation. Yeah,
we're like cockroaches.
Yeah, yeah. We thought cockroaches were bad.
Yeah, right.
My oldest son likes to say, well, some of us are likely to survive. We're very clever monkeys.
so perfect.
I think we have to plan for that survival.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting in the environmental movement, which has been, let's prevent the climate crisis, let's prevent climate change, blah, blah, blah. Now they're moving to, okay, well, let's adapt to the mess that we've made because it's inevitable.
Because we have no choice.
That's right. That's right.
Eeks.
And we'll come back to that when we talk about Gail's book.
But, most definitely.
What about travel updates? Heidi, have you been on the road lately?
I was in Santa Cruz this weekend. I did an ocean swim race.
Oh, you did?
It was 57 degree water.
Oh.
No wetsuit.
Oh, my goodness.
How does that compare to the water in Puget Sound? You swim there.
It's colder. It's colder here. But to do a mile race in the ocean, it was hard. I thought for some reason that it was a no wetsuit allowed thing, like marathon swimming rules. So I figured, okay, well, I'm just going to brace and go for it. And then everyone was in wetsuits and I realized I misread the rules. I could have packed a damn wetsuit.
So you were the only one without a wetsuit?
I was one of maybe 4 or 5 people out of about 60 swimmers who went in skin.
Oh.
And they did fine.
So if the water is colder, does that make you paddle faster?
That was the idea. And I think I did really well. I was at first it was shocking. Like it just, you know, it just chokes your chest and you're like, can I breathe? And you do some head up stuff for a few hundred yards and then head down, commit. There's kelp beds, which is also really creepy because you get kind of tangled up in the strands of bull kelp. And I just did it. It was fun. No, it was better after. It was 2 loops. So the second loop caught my rhythm and
you knew what you were doing at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so impressed.
Thank you. Yeah.
Normal people get hypothermia for 60 seconds.
They were looking at us like we were crazy though. Some of them like
I swim here. Well, swim is a strong term. Out in front of my house in Colvost Passage.
Oh,
it's more like a plunge.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of like a cartoon character. I come 600 feet out of the water back onto the bank, you know, because it's so cold.
She's walking on water. Like JC.
I can't imagine staying in for... How long did you swim? What was the distance?
28 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
28, I'm 32.
Impressed.
2 rounds in 28 minutes?
Yeah.
Two rounds of what distance?
A mile. I swam a mile in 28 minutes and 32 seconds.
Wow. So where did that put you in the running?
I don't know because I still haven't seen the results posted. But for me, it was my 2018 time in a wetsuit. And wetsuits make you go 10 to 15% faster.
Oh, faster.
So
that
means I'm faster.
Cool.
At 50, almost 54.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what do you do to train for that? How do you get so strong for swimming?
practice, just a lot of repetition. Because I've been so bad this last few months. I've been a workaholic, and then mm-hmm. I went on. You know, I did some swimming in Europe in July, but honestly, my routine has been terrible. I've just been a workaholic, so it's just muscle memory.
Wow.
And
wow.
gumption, willpower.
Yeah, really.
It's mental.
Wow.
Thank you.
So, the I know I can do this.
I can do this.
Yes.
But Costa Rica will be my next trip in November. Mm. The water's 85 degrees. It is ridiculous to try to swim in that heat. No, I'm not going to do it.
You know, I've been in that water, and you got to watch out for jellyfish, stinging jellyfish.
Yes.
I jumped into the water in Costa Rica and went,
yeah.
This really hurts.
It's sea lice. They have a bad, like, they're little.
Is that what it is?
But they're really prevalent. Were you on the Pacific side?
Mm-hmm.
That's where they are.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Yeah, it was not as much fun as I thought it was going to be, by any means.
Oh, so noted.
Yeah. Is that kind of similar to what we call sand fleas here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they
exactly
love to bite.
Right.
They love to bite.
Yeah, they get in your suit and ugh.
You know, they always seem like to me like tiny, tiny shrimp. And I figured in a
yes.
pinch, I could sift them out and stir fry them. And put them over rice.
See, that's so disturbing.
Stir fry sand fleas.
You go straight to sustainable food sources.
Okay, we have now covered the food part, which is what Linda normally does. We've done a recipe for stir-fried sand fleas.
All right, Linda, I expect you to do a demo for us.
Yeah, really.
That's so funny.
So, Gail, any travel for you lately?
Well, I was, like I was saying, I was in a plane last week, honestly, for the first time with maybe one exception since Yosemite. Since the pandemic. So I went to Yosemite and had a little family gathering with my two sisters there. It was fantastic to get to see them. I have some guilt about getting in a plane, and so I had heard about the carbon offsets that you can purchase and was really excited. I mean, I was prepared. I mean, like, if I can afford to get on a plane, even if I can't afford to get an assigned seat, I am going to afford this, you know, the carbon
Southwest
offset.
Southwest Airlines.
Yeah. So you were on Southwest.
And I was really just pleased that it was actually quite affordable. And one of the questions I had as I looked at that was like, why is that not an option right up front for everybody to be, you know, push a button, you know, was maybe between $200 and $300 for the flight. I bought the carbon offset for both my sister and myself, and it was just under $20.
Oh, wait, what's a carbon offset? How does that work?
Planting trees?
Yeah. I was actually flying Alaska, and
right.
I know that there have, as there are in almost all segments of society here and there anyway, some poor business practices, but I did trust Alaska to do their research. And they partner with an organization that does provide that service. So carbon offsets are you actually calculate your carbon footprint for your travel, and then you pay this company. They do things like invest in that amount to bring that back out of the either to reduce the carbon by doing something like planting trees that will pull the carbon out of the atmosphere, or they invest in green energies that they support green energies that would otherwise be, you know, polluting. So it's considered one of the best tools for bringing carbon out of the air, and has been, you know, a large part of like the Paris climate talks and things like that over the years.
I had no idea. That's great to know.
Yeah. So I was kind of surprised that it isn't out there more, that it isn't really out front and center.
I recently bought Alaska Airlines tickets and I didn't see that option.
No, I had to go looking. I had to go looking.
Okay.
It wasn't. And I believe most airlines do have it now, but I think it's time. I know after I did that, I was like, maybe it's time to get out a piece of cardboard and do a little marching up in front and down in the airport just to let people know it's out there. You know, that's
check
an option.
Check your carbon offset ticket. Yeah.
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 So check it out.
That sounds great.
Flights of up to 25,000 miles on Alaska Airlines, $62.50. If you're flying up to 10,000 miles, like you said, Gail, $25.
Yeah.
Flights of up to 5,000 miles, $12.50 for the off.
That's nothing.
And it's right there. It's alaskaair.com/sustainability. And you can look at all their sustainability programs. But they're in that link, there are actual hyperlinks dedicated to each one of those flight levels, and you can purchase your offset. Ding. Very cool.
Yeah. Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you, Gail. And I believe Alaska is one of the airlines that is researching biofuel for airlines.
Yeah, they. I just did a little reading because I was in there looking at this, and I'm by no means an expert on them or this topic. But what I did learn is that they have they've set the goal of by 2040 to be completely carbon neutral. And that does include both the use of biofuels as well as looking at electric, planes
that
have a much smaller carbon.
Which is a little scary. I'm not sure I'm ready to get into an electric plane until they have
in-flight
charging.
So excited. Seriously, so excited. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. I just want to know that they're going to make it all the way.
Well, you know, actually,
oops, the battery's dead.
I would have to say, there's that. And that is one of the issues is like the distance they can go.
Yeah.
But honestly, an electric motor is far more reliable than a mechanical.
Oh, really? Than internal combustion?
Absolutely. And so I think that's a, kind of a plus. So
as long as it's charged,
I'm with you, Heidi.
Going.
I'm ready. I'm ready to get on it.
As soon as I saw that headline come through, I was like, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And I love that they were piloting it, no pun intended, in our state, really close by. I thought, oh, my God, this is so amazing. And you see all those planes on the runway.
Oh, I know. Oh. I know. Yeah. It's disturbing.
Yes. But I'm still going to travel.
Well, that's one of those things. It's hard to stop traveling. We've built our lives around that. We want to see our families. We want to see the world. It's become the norm for us. And I think that's why something like this carbon offset program, if it was more readily known that you could do that, I think there are a lot of people, certainly in Vashon and the Northwest, would push that button in a heartbeat.
You bet.
It kind of like push this button if you'd like a little less guilt.
Seriously, it would be that quick to market.
Yeah, the guilt-ridden, guilt-ridder button.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Guilt-ridder.
Guilt-free travel. Yeah. Thank you for that. That was huge. Yeah. I will be doing this.
Cool.
Costa Rica, I'm going to have to buy the big one.
Yeah. It's worth it, though. If you can't afford, that's kind of my thought. If you can afford to travel, you can afford to do your part to pull that carbon back out. So
not even a night of cocktails.
No.
Right.
Cool.
So.
Are you dressing up for Halloween?
Probably.
Recycle like a new costume tentative. Or something.
I've got a bunch of old ones that I'm kind of tired of, so I might just make something up. Maybe wear part of one on my body and another part on my head or something. I don't know. But I do love Halloween and Thanksgiving are my favorite holidays.
Oh, so
costumes and food.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool. My two favorite things: costuming and food.
Nice. All right.
And I have my kids coming for Halloween.
Cool.
So I'm going to drag them through the streets of Vashon.
Yeah.
And we have been in search of haunted houses to visit.
Oh.
And we found some. One in Seattle, one in Tacoma. And I believe Camp Burton has their... I don't know if it's a drive-through or a walk-through haunted thing, but they have something.
I saw something on the reader board between the ferry, North End Ferry and town, about a haunted house on Vashon or haunted.
What?
Was it Ober Park is going to be haunted? I'm not sure, but that was just a little tidbit I picked up on my drive here.
Well, as far as I know, Vashon is going to jump back into its Halloween revelry tradition.
Yay.
I'm certainly hoping because it's so much fun. It is. So are you going to dress up for Halloween?
I'm probably going to recycle this go-go dancer outfit. It's like a half black, half white kind of color.
I've seen that on you.
Shift.
I remember
I've only
this.
Worn it one time. It was at Lip Sync Battle.
Ah, that's where I saw it.
The black bob and a white patent little brimmed tam thing and some white patent go-go boots, some fishnet stockings, and a black bob wig. Yeah. Big glasses.
I'll know who you are, but no one else will.
Nope.
Gail, are you going to dress up for Halloween?
Well, over the years, I've worn kind of alternated between two costumes if I dress up at all. One is a cowgirl, and the other is a hippie. And of course, people in Vashon just think I look like
that's right.
back from Vashon.
That's right. Yeah, so you're going to wear a costume?
So great.
Yeah, but
you'll have to be a cowgirl.
This year I'm heading up to Orcas Island. I have a couple of grandkids up there. These are kind of adopted family. And anyway, I'm looking forward to trick-or-treating with them. And on Orcas, they do a fun Halloween event where their mom is participating in this. There'll be several dozen, maybe as many as 50 women dress up in witches' costumes, tall black hats, get on their paddle boards, they'll paddle into downtown East Sound as a parade into downtown East Sound
that
on paddleboard.
That is so cool.
So that was really, I've seen it a couple times there. And
I've seen photos of that. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful.
That looks really fun.
You know, on Vashon, people don't necessarily trick or treat because it's so rural.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids, I live up on the north end in a neighborhood, and one of the kids in the neighborhood sent out a flyer, all this scrappy kid written flyer that says, "Feel free to leave candy at the end of your driveway."
Oh my God.
For the kids or the raccoons, whoever gets there first.
Right. Yeah, it'll be the raccoons.
But it's very funny.
You were right, by the way. Camp Burton is having a haunted house. They're having a whole festival, and they're starting with, it's Saturday, the 29th of October. So it's 3:00. They're going to do carnival and Halloween portraits. 3 to 9, there's a fortune teller, campfire stories, a haunted tour. So I think you're right. I think it's in a car. There's hay rides. And then at 7 p.m., there's a monster bash dance.
And all this is on the 29th?
Yeah, it's Saturday, the 29th.
Oh, darn.
I know.
Okay.
It's kind of weird. Not like,
but nothing on Halloween.
No, which is Monday.
Well,
Monday,
it's good, yeah. Not in competition. You can go to both.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, strange. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. Yes. Okay, so I was thinking about Halloween, and I looked up some funny Halloween stories. Do you guys have any funny Halloween stories?
Start us off.
Yeah.
All right, this one was hilarious. This woman says, "I had a kid come to my door later than all the other kids. He dressed all in red. He didn't say trick or treat. He said, 'I'm your period. Sorry, I'm late.'"
Oh, no. I think a parent put him up to that. That's pretty good, though.
Right.
When I was about 8 years old, my mother, who was a bit of a practical joker, dressed herself up like a special needs boy. With a stocking over her head and a hat that was askew and a flannel jacket. And I was out trick-or-treating as a princess. And she approached me with this character and a very strange voice and said, "Can I have your candy, little girl?"
Your mother.
My mother. My mother did this. And I said, "Of course you can. I'm the good princess." So I gave her all my candy.
Sucka. And then later did she say, "You were so good, and here's your candy back?" How'd it go down?
She never gave it back.
Wait, what?
I don't remember getting it back. But, you know, in those times, we lived in a big apartment complex. I would have like 8 bags of candy by the time the night was over.
Okay.
So.
Oh, I remember that as a child. And I have 2 sisters, one on either side. And, you know, we would take, that was back when candy came in, like the big, you would actually get real candy bars.
Yeah.
And things, not the little fun size. I don't know whose idea. That's a marketing trick if I ever saw one.
Oh,
to call that a fun size. Fun would be like 3 times bigger.
That'd be really fun. Yeah.
We would sort and trade, and you know, it was quite a scene when we got back to the house.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That was
always the case.
I like that.
Yeah. Just sorting it all out. And when my kids were little, it was the 70s, and I was into au naturel, organic. So I went to all the trouble of making little peanut butter balls with raisins in them, which of course the parents threw away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Boring.
That was
well,
really
raisins
sweet.
Are kind of like the, I hate to say this, Susan, I'm nothing against your peanut butter balls with raisins in it, but remember when you'd get raisins as a kid yourself and you'd be like,
"The little
I know."
Yeah, I think that was the reaction they all had. There was honey and coconut in them too, but didn't fly.
I want to hear more of these. We do need to say hello to our underwriters.
Oh, we do.
Really quick.
Can't do what we do on Voice of Vashon without our underwriters, like Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe. Pastries and vegetarian lunches by day and tasty sips and special events at night. Located on Vashon Highway on the south end of town. And don't miss the Wild Mermaid Cafe and store located at the North End Ferry. Visit VashonSnapdragon.com for up-to-date hours of operation.
Voice of Vashon thanks Dental Care of Vashon for its programming support. If you have tooth or gum discomfort, damaged or missing teeth, sleep issues, or need crowns or dental implants, Dr. Demova and her team will bring you relief in a comfortable, caring environment. Call them at 206-457-2744 and find them on the web at dentalcareofvashon.com.
And we're back. Thank you to our underwriters. We could not be here without you. We would not be here without you.
Word.
Okay, we're looking for funny Halloween stories. This one came from Jimmy Fallon, and he said, in 1994, I went to a party where three people dressed up like David Hasselhoff from Baywatch. At one point, someone accidentally fell into the pool, and all the Hasselhoffs jumped in to save
I would love a video of that. That's so good.
Wouldn't
great.
That be hilarious?
Yes.
Yes, right.
So good.
This person says, he brought the wrong kid home, didn't notice till the mask came off. Yeah, I think that was planned.
It's parenting nightmares of mine.
I'm just going to say that must have been a dad, not a mom.
I think so.
That's right.
So.
Yeah, it was a dad.
Unless the kid was asleep. Like, how does that work?
Had to work on Halloween last year, and this girl in a taco costume came in, ordered tacos, and about three bites into it, she asked her friends, is this cannibalism?
Yes.
So this one is such a visual. My husband stuffed his clothes to make a scarecrow and sat it on a bench in our yard the week before Halloween. On Halloween night, he traded places with it and scared the poop out of the trick-or-treaters.
So good. It's the best.
Oh, this is funny. We had a lady down the street, quote, Crazy Lynn, she was called. She gave us cigarettes instead of candy.
We were
eight.
Oh, my God.
Ew.
Okay.
Those are great.
Okay. That was fun. And then I looked up weird Halloween costumes. And some of them are just obscene. A lot of them are just, I don't know. Well, they're weird. Miss Cookie. This is,
ew.
Yeah. These are really visual. It's hard. This
oh
is a woman in a, what would you call it? A bustier. That
it
has,
looks like she just has patches of stuff.
Looks like she has pasties on
her naked body. Yeah.
Yeah. All the color of Toll House cookies with chocolate chips.
It's not attractive.
No, it's not. It's not. You know, most of these are sexy, although I like this. For your favorite lizard, you can get a hat that makes it look like a unicorn.
I have seen some dog costumes out along the streets that...
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, very
now
fun.
Here's one that's funny
cute.
For a dog. It's a box that goes over the dog's head, and it's called the kissing booth.
Oh,
and the dog can lick your face.
I like that one.
I like that one, too.
The least humiliating dog costume I've seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It at least gives them some agency.
Okay. So if Halloween is on a Monday and the chamber is doing their usual trick-or-treat fest, and it appears that they are, it is, I should say, because a thing is not, a company is not a he, she, or they, it is an it. It is doing.
You're editing yourself. You're editing yourself as you speak.
Well, someone needs to. So does that mean the viewing spots such as Ruby Brink will not be open? Or is the Ruby Brink open on that? Because I'm thinking window seats, man. Being out in the rain.
Right.
And not being cold.
It used to be that the hardware store, one right on the corner,
that was the spot. Yeah.
That was the spot.
Where does one watch them?
I think you almost have to walk in the street, but maybe Ruby Brink is open. You probably have to fight for a window seat. But
this is a good spot, our studio.
Yeah, probably the tradition has been that there are Voice of Vashon celebrities in here handing out candy while they're in costume.
I like that.
Yeah, so you can't recognize them. Not that you could anyway.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is radio after all.
Cool.
Yeah, right. But this is a good place. And I understand there are adult activities after the trick-or-treating, which I believe ends at 5 o'clock.
Oh, yes. Sinner and the Saints is playing, doing a street dance.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. I think
wow,
it's at
cool.
the corner here at U.S. Bank.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. That is fun. Yeah.
He's great.
So rain or not.
Right.
Well, yeah, they'll have a canopy. The people dancing may not, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Right. The band will. There'll be a lot of wet dancers out there.
I could handle that.
Beyond sweat.
I can't complain about rain after all our long, dry stretch.
We need it. We do.
Yeah, I would just, I just walk in it with just a gigantic smile on my face.
I know. I love it. And yeah, I promised last year after the drought that I would never complain about the rain again.
Yep.
I remember many years ago when I was traveling for work, I was in San Jose at the end of one of California's long droughts when the rain came down and people were running out into the street just to soak it up.
Oh, they're happy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Cool. Very. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Of course, I was from Chicago at the time and I thought, wow, this is interesting. Now I understand. Yeah,
that's where the real weather is. Chicago, they don't play, man. It's icy. You pull up curbside and you could step in 18 inches of slushy grossness. That's hardcore action at Chicago. You can have it.
When I lived and worked there in the corporate world, I walked on ice in high heels.
Oh, Susan.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
No wonder you're here.
Yeah, exactly.
That explains a lot.
That does. That's right. All right. We have our special guest here, and we want to dive into her book.
Yes.
Gail Kellner has written the book called Hope, A History of the Future. I just love that title.
Thank you.
Gail is an Islander and a radio veteran, a longtime veteran of the Brown Briefly. And Gail, I loved this book. It took me a little while to get into it. It's very interesting. You kind of tell it as flashbacks from the future to the present or just a couple years ahead of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
So what motivated you to write this book?
Well, there were several things. The time I started the book, I was a teacher, and I was just seeing so many students, as well as my own adult children, who had no feeling of hope, no feeling as they talked about the future. It was with such a heavy heart, and I just believed that the world needed a story out of the climate crisis. Like how else might that, you know, how else might it end? What else might come about? But I held myself to the standard of basing the story in scientific possibility as well as legal and historical precedent. So this isn't just a story that I made up. I put in the time and effort to educate myself and then the story grew from that. So basically it imagines a peaceful, just, verdant future world that could arise after a climate collapse. And it takes an unblinking eye. I mean, it's an unblinking look at what could happen.
It is. And that's the dystopian part. I want you to say more about that because it was pretty eye-opening. And I want to hear more about the scientific facts that you explored, basically extrapolating on where we are now to where we could end up or where we could go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to speak to that, but I would like to say that the book Hope, A History of the Future has a happy ending. And that, I think, is an important piece for people to be able to take an honest look at where we are and where we may go from here, is to have an idea that we also don't know what the final output, there's no final outcome in particular that we can say what it will be. And so I think it's very easy as human beings to imagine what will go wrong. We're very good at that. We're hardwired to see problems. We're hardwired to be, fear is our friend sometimes in that way. But the downside of that is it sometimes means that we are blind or it's more difficult to imagine how things might turn out right. And so that is the emphasis of the book, is really that things could come out much better than we imagine. We could create a verdant, peaceful, just world, and we could do it right now. We don't even necessarily, and we certainly don't have to go through a climate collapse to get there. We have, you know, if you are reading and informed about this topic, you realize that we actually already have the answers. We know what to do.
We do. Yeah.
We just don't have right now the political, or I would say cultural or personal fortitude to take it on. And so back to your question, talk a little bit about the dystopian piece.
Yeah.
It does take a steely-eyed look at what might occur if we continue on the path that we're on. In fact, we don't know exactly, but certainly there is a feedback systems in the climate that could cause an acceleration of what we've already seen. And when I started writing this, actually, I kind of hate to say this, it was like 2016, which is getting to be a while ago, 5-6 years ago now. Many of the things that I began to predict based on my reading and just thinking about what would happen have actually come about.
Such as
the smoke event, the smoke.
Yeah.
This was something not having any, no longer being able to expect clear skies, long periods of drought, those, you know, some of those kind of things. And so it does. In 2016, when I started, the climate crisis, many, many people were aware of it, but more in the scientific community, more among just segments of society. It is now, at the time, I really felt we needed also people to be a little bit alarmed, that we needed to do something. And so it is a call to action in the sense that we need to act, you know, in order to avoid the worst of possible outcomes.
You know, I work with environmental organizations here on the island, and I'm kind of a fanatic about it. And I often struggle with my cohorts because I want to say climate crisis. I want people to be alarmed. I want them to be scared into action. A lot of people don't. They say that's a negative approach, that it should be climate change and we can still do something about it. And yes, we can. But what, Gail, as someone who has explored the possibilities, what do you think individuals can do, and who else do you think is responsible in terms of, I'm thinking, either politicians or corporate leaders?
Well, surprisingly and hopefully, about 25% of what we can do with regard to our own climate, our own carbon footprint, about 25% of that is individual choices that you make every day. How often do you drive your car? Where do you get your food? How local is that? What kind of things do you eat? How often do you fly? How much do you buy? These kind of things are completely within our grasp to make a difference. And somebody can say, I can bring this crisis, help 25% by an individual choice. That's a lot, in my opinion.
That is a lot.
The other are more systematic things. They're things that require the cooperation and work together of governments as well as international agencies from the local level, state level, on up national and international levels. But we also are the people who are making those decisions ultimately, and our engagement in that process, our voices in that process are an important part. And I think that, honestly, I think we have a responsibility as the adults in the room to do what we can for future generations, to do everything we can within our, you know, within our power. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, looking at systems that consume so much, and our own consumption patterns.
What do you see as the role of capitalism in that?
Well, I small scale capitalism, I don't really have a problem with that. I think I have more of an issue with consumerism. Mm-hmm. And that's really a slightly different issue. And so it's a slightly different way of thinking about it. So capitalism and consumerism are currently in our culture locked hand in hand, mm-hmm. but they don't have to be. And I think that any kind of system that has built in obsolescence is a problem. I think we need to look at the at those kind of things related to consumerism, as well as our own particular decisions every day. You know, can I get that at Granny's? Can I reuse this? Mm-hmm, can I? Mm-hmm. Do I really need to order that on Amazon and have it flown halfway, you know, across the world?
Road miles.
Sometimes yeah. The answer might be yes, but you should, in my opinion, should at least be asking yourself that question: is it worth it? Am I taking more than my share? Am I taking from those who are to come after me? You know, what kind of world am I personally leaving behind me? So I think it's so important to realize how much choice and how much power we have in our own lives.
We're talking to Gail Kellner, author of Hope, A History of the Future, and you're listening to The Clatch. I'm Susan McCabe here with Heidi Skripek.
Hi.
And Gail Kellner. Do we need to recognize our underwriters?
It's probably an ideal time to do exactly that, Susan. Why don't we?
Let's do
this. Portion of VOV programming comes to you with support from Vashon Center for the Arts. VCA provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VashonCenterForTheArts.org.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Spring Organics. 40-plus years of organic, non-GMO soy foods made daily right here on Vashon. Tours are available. Find them on the web at islandspringorganics.com.
Thank you to our underwriters.
Thank you to our underwriters, and welcome back to The Clatch to Heidi Skripek and Gail Kellner, our guests here on The Clatch. Gail, author of Hope, A History of the Future. I just love that title.
I have to say it was a little long after I'd written it a bajillion times. I thought, why didn't I just call it something simpler?
That's not bad at all. You hit the word limit. That was perfect. Are you a cat person, by the way?
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is I'm actually allergic to cats, but I love them. And in this story, because it's fact-based fiction, so sometimes called speculative fiction, sometimes science fiction, cli-fi. My favorite is solar punk.
Solar punk, I like
solar punk is a whole new genre that has been growing, and it's people who are writing about answers, who are writing about solutions, not just the problems. And so that's my favorite way to describe it is solar punk.
I love that.
But in the basic story, A history book from the future falls out of time and place and into the Denzel family's home. And with the help of a mystical cat that has also taken up residence there, they each open this book to a different place and read about the future world. And in it, they do follow a group of people who survive the climate crisis, come out the other side. And without telling you too much, and they come to a world and they create a world together that not just these people, but the people that are left after the collapse, create a peaceful, just, verdant future world. And they're celebrating 100 years of peace. And it's a look into what that could look like. And again, it's based in scientific possibility as well as legal and historical precedents that I include in the back of the book. And
where can we get it?
Well, you know, it got amazing reviews in journals that librarians used for picking up books. So there's four copies available at the Seattle Public Library. I think it's now available at the King County Library, locally, Vashon Bookshop.
Nice.
And it's in libraries in the UK, up and down the East Coast and the West Coast. So I'm really pleased that it's available. And of course, those of you know, who shop online, it's available at Bookshop, which is supports independent bookstores, as well as Amazon and all the big ones. So
can it be a Kindle?
It's available,
also available
as Kindle.
Cool. Yep. So you don't have to use paper.
Right. If you don't want
to. And we've touched on so many fascinating issues in the course of this discussion with Gail. about consumerism and so forth. There are just a couple things that I want to, that I was struck by, because in your book, you point out that war has been internationally declared illegal several times in contemporary history, starting, I think, 1914, and up to 1928, when it was declared illegal by the folks that perpetrated, including the folks who perpetrated World War II. So war is illegal. Someone tell that
you
to
can't
Putin.
Do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, and that is the basis. When I was, we were talking a little before we went on air. You know, when we feel outrage or upset that Russia has invaded Ukraine, it is this document, the Treaty for the Renunciation of War, signed in 1928 by all the major world powers, and since then, nearly every country in the world has signed on to it. It is the basis for our outrage. Prior to that, it would have just been considered, you know, another day. It's just, oh, that's Thursday. You know, people were invading and doing that regularly. There was no international agreement, and it still provides. I think it's pointing the way. And interestingly, it was women. After they got the right to vote, many of them were instrumental in demanding that war be outlawed after this, in particular, after the ravages of the First World War.
Hmm. And women, this is my really clumsy segue, women are the perpetrators of what is kind of a fashion industry pandemic, if you will. At least Heidi and I have watched a documentary called The True Cost. When we talk about consumption, fashion industry, as it turns out, is one of the major perpetrators
offenders.
Of the mess, offenders, that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of planned obsolescence, right? It's a
exactly.
new season.
Exactly.
Have to have a new look.
And fast fashion kind of accelerated the whole, this is so last year to, this is so last month.
Mm-hmm. Influencers on social media. But yeah, it's Zara, it's H&M, everything under $10, and our landfills show it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just textiles galore. Mm-hmm. And something that you said about, you know, there's a place for capitalism. And I'm with you. There's greed. And there's capitalism. Hmm. And I mean, we're a capitalist society in America. That's kind of what we're built on. And there is a place where you can still have a profit and have a business model and have employees and have it scale and pay your fair share. I mean, I think there's a place for that. But it's the greed, even in this inflationary time. I'm going off on a tangent.
Go for it.
But I see it. I totally see it. The inflation that we're seeing, you know, a big chunk of it isn't even cost of goods, is greed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people taking, we have an opportunity here. There's a need, there's a demand, and there's some liquidity in our American bank account. So go get them, make your money.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a ton of that. And I'm feeling really good after watching that documentary about my place in consumerism, because I hang on to my clothes. I buy on consignment. I'm wearing a 1984 Jeffrey Bean jacket that I acquired on eBay.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. And I love it. And somebody, it still had the tags on it. And I got it a couple years ago. And I told the lady, I had this in high school. I'm so excited to have it again, you know, now that I'm in my 50s. And I will love it and wear it and treasure it and take good care of it forever.
Yeah, that's slow fashion.
Yes.
And it used to be that that couturier or high fashion was about buying a piece.
Yeah.
There were wardrobe pieces. You didn't have a gazillion T-shirts or a gazillion pairs of jeans. And our culture, when you said there is a need, our culture creates the need. Advertising teaches advertisers, marketing to create a need. With the idea that if you have this thing, you're going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Thor will come leaping into your bedroom and sweep you off your feet.
Or
throw you on the bed because you're wearing this certain perfume.
Yeah.
Makes the pheromones go crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. That kind of thing.
Well, yeah. And we were looking at weird Halloween costumes, and they were all bikinis and bustiers and stuff that and the fashion is equated with sexual happiness and sexual gratification and acceptance, and it's narrowed the parameters of an acceptable body, an acceptable woman, particularly.
Yes, those standards.
Yeah.
But even behind that veil, the impacts on the climate were what floored me in the documentary.
Yeah.
Just water's getting poisoned with chemicals and dyes. The lives taken in Bangladesh. Was it Bangladesh? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Bangladesh for them. Rana Plaza was this... was supposed to be a four-story building that got built up to eight without proper permitting. The infrastructure wasn't there to hold the building steady, and it collapsed, and hundreds of people died. Do you know that the owner got 3 years of jail time, and it was on some corruption charge? It wasn't even related to that. And he's been postponing. This was in 1997. He's been postponing the trials and the charges all the way till just this year. He's been able to postpone it 25 times.
And he continues to earn money then as a fashion perpetrator.
He hasn't suffered.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, at what cost, you know? And then it profiles these people's lives. They work for $3 a day. And one woman had to bring her kid to work sometimes. And she ended up bringing her child out to the sticks where her parents lived so that she could go and work. And it's just... You don't see that. I mean, there's the advertising, and then there's the want, and there's the need, and there's the cheap clothing. But then there's these lives behind it that are just, it's acceptable. How is that okay?
Yeah. The waters that are poisoned in these communities by the dyes and by the chemicals that they use to make the fabrics. These kids are suffering birth defects.
Oh,
there are
yeah.
higher rates of cancer.
Yeah. Inorganic cotton even. Ugh.
And
I had no idea.
and it's what we're, as Gail has said, the choices that we individuals make can impact that dramatically. If we choose not to buy that new stuff, not to buy synthetic fabrics.
And to ask the questions, too. One thing that's in the back of your book that I started to speed read, you have these wonderful articles in the back, and it's just a whole new set of rules that expands upon what exists today in America. And they're so... wonderful. There was one about just having laws that are written in plain language that you could understand and you don't have to lawyer up.
Yeah,
that's paraphrased.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
that was so cool.
Yeah. I mean, we can do things differently. And the way that the world is run is based on a set of agreements that were made long, long ago that clearly have run their course and are no longer functioning. For the planet or for the people involved. And so I think it's time to re-look at that. And just like the pandemic had unexpected consequences, so can the climate crisis. So I don't take a complete view that this is all terrible, what's happening. It is terrible on an individual basis, the loss of habitat, the loss of species. We're in the midst of the sixth extinction event, and the cost to humans as well. But that said, there will be things. There usually a crisis also creates opportunity for change, and sometimes we have to break the way things are in order to remake them new. And this may be, you know, it is possible. This is an opportunity to do that.
Are you feeling that?
I choose to believe it.
Good.
I also realize the severity and seriousness of the situation, and hence why, you know, you do have to be a little brave to read the book from the standpoint it does. Mm-hmm. It does take a look at that. But it also leaves the readers, I believe, that's my hope anyway, it leaves a reader with the sense that we could do something different, and we can, and by the choices that we make in our lives and in who we choose to lead us.
You know, I was perusing The Human Condition in my head the other day, and I was thinking, we humans, probably for the first time in history at least, are facing every possible crisis that we could. We're looking at potential world war. We're looking at famine, pandemic, the end of democracy, and of course, the climate crisis. And I had to ask myself,
oh, there's more.
Oh, did I miss something?
Abortion.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah. Yeah, yeah, the subjugation of women.
That.
And so I'm asking myself, does this mean we're looking, we're learning something, or does this mean we're just watching the end? I don't know. So the end for the Clatch is coming, and I wanted to end on something kind of funny.
Okay.
So do you ever wonder why your dog follows you into the bathroom? Apparently, studies have been done on this, and it's perfectly normal because we teach them, they basically follow us to every room in the house. Why not the bathroom, especially when we're sitting down and available for petting or conversation?
Long gazes in the bathroom.
That's right. So it's this thing
like
said
like having a 2-year-old in the house.
Right. Yes, we've all been there, right? Because they're not being little creeps who like to watch us poop, actually. This veterinarian says there's no indication that they even know what a bathroom is doing there.
That's true.
Although I swear I had a dog that knew that. I taught her how to be housebroken by observing me. But that's another story for another time.
Cats even try to do that sometimes. And if I slide, I have those slider doors. Suddenly there'll be like the paw that comes underneath the little crack. And it's like, no, you cannot. You may not come in. That's really cute, though. I have cats.
Yeah. And so cats follow into the bathroom, too, or just with their paws?
Just, well, if I don't shut the door, they definitely will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No kissing booth costume.
Well, I think that about does our show for us, does it not?
Yes. Any other Vashon issues? Fairies suck.
Don't get me started.
It's embarrassingly horrible. And to go commit to a client meeting or anything off island, I shrink. You know, can you be at Pike Place Market at 1 o'clock? Guess what that means?
You have to leave at
10:15. Yeah. Yes. It means I have to get in line at 9 mm-hmm. to get a 10:15 boat that may or may not be on time. Kill an hour or so in Pike Place Market, which is actually not a horrible thing because you can go get flowers
eat
really good food, prepare dinner, or buy things for tonight's dinner. But it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. Sorry, especially if you want to go off the south end and it's canceled.
So 5 o'clock.
What do you do?
Yeah. So that's my
worst yet. If you're on the other
stay
side,
home whenever
how
possible.
How do you get home? Yeah, right.
It's been bad though. I mean, it's been really bad. And my prayer is that WSF can recruit and retain, because they really need to run those boats. This is all we have. This is a marine highway system, much like Sitka has. And we need our system to work and serve
Seems
us.
Like that, too, is an interesting opportunity to bring more women and more people of color or minorities that have not traditionally been on those crews in. And I've begun to see that as I'm looking around at the... Yeah, it is changing. So
well, and the members of the crew they're having trouble recruiting are the engineers and the highly trained people, and they used to pay for that training, but the state stopped doing that. So it's time for Vashonians to make a lot of noise.
Okay.
Train people, train women, train people of color, and pay for it and get those ferries going. It is all we have.
Okay, I have a funny story.
Okay.
Because we have a minute.
Okay.
So... In PR, I worked in corporate PR, a lot of hospitality. I opened a nightclub in Belltown. It's called Club Medusa. And there was a young man who attended, and I was in the throes of divorce. And, you know, the music was good. The beats were bumping. He was cute. All of a sudden, we started making out on the dance floor.
Uh-oh.
And he's like, can we go out? And I said, I don't know. I don't think so. I'm kind of in the middle of, like, I'm just divorced and I have kids. And now this was fun. Do you have a sister? Years later, I look, I'm like, I know that name. It's the spokesman for the Washington State Ferries.
Oh, really?
You had your chance.
He was a good kisser.
So no. You got an inside track.
Inside the mouth. You could be, it was awesome. Anyway, I thought that was super funny. I'm like, so now every time I tweet some gripe to WSF, I'm thinking that that man is reading my tweets. Because he's still there. I've said too much. I will edit this out later.
Oh, no, you won't. That's a great story. And listen up, Washington State Fairies.
Boom. Get it together.
Yeah.
In the meantime, read Gigi Kellner's Hope, A History of the Future. And Kellner, isn't that waiter in German?
You know, I have heard that.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is a German name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kitchen, Kellner. Yeah, Kellner is the waiter. Very cool. Get this book. Can't wait to
read
it.
Look for the cat eyes on the cover.
It's a starry, it looks
it's
like a
magical
starry
cat.
Night.
Wow. He's the magical part of the whole thing.
You're listening to KVSH LP Vashon
101.9. Thanks for listening to The Clatch.